Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to the Running Explained podcast. I'm your host, Coach Elizabeth. When I started running at the age of 29, I had so many questions and what felt like nowhere to turn to for answers. So now I'm here to answer all your questions about running and running adjacent topics to help you become a better, smarter, more knowledgeable runner. Whether you're brand new or you've been doing this for a while, there's always more we can learn about running. And now you can train with Running Explained wherever you go. Check out the new Run Club by Running Explained app. The Run Club by Running Explained gives you the freedom to build your own training schedule using Running Explained training plans, including training for races, building your base, post-race recovery, running for fitness, and more, and you can swap between plans as needed. Then layer on a running-specific strength training program that matches your goals and includes plyo, core, and mobility. Plus, you have instant access to a variety of resources at your fingertips, including training guides, pacing resources, Run Fueling 101, and more. Join the Run Club Plus for a monthly live group coaching call led by me, Coach Elizabeth, plus in-app chat support and other fun inclusions. Start your 3-day free trial now at runningexplained.co/theRunClub or by visiting the link in the show notes. And now, let's get started. Hey friends, a very warm welcome to you. Welcome to the Running Explained podcast. I am back with a guest episode this week. I'm really excited to have this guest on my show. Luke Serrato is a fellow sober runner, now runs marathons. Sound familiar? And this week we're going to talk about getting sober and running and how those two things can be related. As we talk about in the show, I don't care if you drink. We don't care, right? It's not about if you do or do not drink. It's about, do you have that voice in your head that tells you, hey, maybe this isn't working for me. Maybe this isn't so good for me. But there's a lot of challenges sometimes to making those big life changes. So yeah, it's a wide-ranging conversation. There is some mild profanity. I'll call it PG-13. So just be advised. And thank you so much for listening. Luke, welcome to the show. I'm excited to have you here.
Hey, Elizabeth, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So my very first question to all of my guests is, tell us, how did you become a runner?
It's a bit of a loaded question, I guess. I became a runner, you know, in 2019. 2019, I became a runner. I wanted to try something different. And I ran my first race, a 10K race on Mother's Day 2019. First time wearing a race bib. And I was hooked. The crowds, the adrenaline, the people. And that's when the running journey began.
So I know we're here talking about sobriety and recovery and running. So let me ask you about your story then, because that's a huge part of what you do today.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, yeah, just so I've been sober 7.5 years. I would say my first 5 years of my sober journey, I was in what I call the sober closet. Like, I was embarrassed at the fact that I was sober. I looked at it like a weakness, like something's wrong with me. Like, Luke, that's not cool. You can't drink like most people. Like, that's not, like, you shouldn't talk about that. And that's how it was for the first 5 years of my journey. I was very much ashamed of the fact that I was sober. Nobody really knew outside of like close friends and family. I just didn't really talk about it. And then something happened when I hit my 5-year anniversary. It was just around the time that I got news that I qualified for the Boston Marathon. I had picked up running a couple of years before that, and I was just like all in on running. And something to do with qualifying for Boston, hitting my 5-year anniversary, I was like, Luke, be proud of yourself for a second. So that's when I kind of came out. I was like, hey, I've been sober for 5 years. I got into running. I qualified for Boston, and I just started sharing my story. And I don't know how else to do it, but to do it on LinkedIn. I worked for at the time a big global company, a tech company, and I was like, all my social media, everything was private. I was still am a very like private person, even though you see a lot of my videos, I'm sure, like being goofy. But anyways, I went on LinkedIn and I was like, hey, here's my story, like in three paragraphs. And I didn't really expect too much of it. I was just like, it was so liberating just to get my story off my chest. And then just a couple of days later, like I just started getting so many messages and stuff like that. I was like, wow, there's like something here. People either personally or with friends or family can relate to some of the stuff that I mentioned. So I knew there was something there that I wanted to, you know, explore. And I was just felt so free to be able to talk about it.
So congratulations on your sobriety. I quit drinking in 2017. So how many years ago was that? Seven years. Yeah. So almost 7 years for me. And that's interesting that you...
Congrats.
Thank you. It's really interesting that you didn't want to talk about it though. And I mean, I'd love to hear more about your story and how, because this is not really something that I've talked about too much on my show. I've talked about it on a couple other podcasts and my story. And I think when people meet me now who didn't know me then, they're shocked. They're like, and I'm like, oh, no, I was drinking myself to death in my late 20s. They're like, what? but I think when I quit drinking, it was to nobody's surprise. And it was like, oh, good for you. What was your experience like that? And how did it come about? You're like, nope, it's time. This isn't serving me anymore.
Yeah. So a lot of the people, when they first found out that I was not drinking, they were questioning it. Like, why? Like, you weren't that bad. You know, you're fun. You're fun. I love partying with you. You're such a fun, high energy type, you know, person. That so I was getting like a lot of questions, especially when I came out and I was like, hey, I've been sober. I didn't know and why, like questioning, like I said, you know, I always had a good job. I went to the gym a lot. I didn't look like I was like suffering, but deep down I was absolutely. So I did get like a lot of questions about that.
I think the myth, I'm going to say the myth of the functioning alcoholic, because nobody is functional as an alcoholic, but this idea that you have to be in a certain way in order to deserve sobriety or like think about quitting drinking, that's always been really interesting to me because, you know, I talk about being sober now and I've gotten DMs and questions and say, you know, essentially somebody's questioning their relationship with alcohol, but I only, you know, but it's not that bad, right? But I'm only drinking this much. And it's not about really how much, it's about how it makes you feel.
Totally. Yeah, totally. And where I've come now, you know, it's such a positive thing. Like it's a really great thing that I did that for myself. You know, like if I look at, you know, just how my life is now, I mean, it's not perfect. I'm not pretending to have a perfect life. You know, I'm blessed with a beautiful daughter. You know, she's turning 5 soon. You know, got a great wife, great friends, great family. But I, you know, I have my days, obviously, but I don't, the way I look at it is my lows aren't nearly as low. And my highs are also not as high. Like, I'm just looking to be more consistent, honestly, at this point in my life. You know, I'll be 40 in a few months. So I'm just looking to be consistent. I'm looking to be reliable, dependable. That's it. I just want to be my best self. And 1000% for me, that means without alcohol. And I don't look at it like black or white. Like my wife drinks, most of my friends drink. I have nothing against alcohol. Just for me, I know myself that I cannot be like touching that stuff. It's not worth it.
I get this sometimes. Do people sometimes assume that because you don't drink and also you're a marathoner, right? You're a very fit person and also you don't drink, that they make this blanket assumption that you are like in a proselytize that nobody should be drinking, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, that assumption. Yeah. And it's weird because people get very defensive about that. For like, sure. Oh, you they know, do. I don't drink that much.
They do. Exactly. As soon as they hear that you don't drink, they immediately start in a way justifying their drinking, right? Like, oh, I only drink, like you said, I don't drink that much. I only drink on the weekends. You know what I mean? So it's, I've seen that a lot. I'm sure you have too, right? But the thing that I keep going back to is like, a big part of my problem was that I was just an absolute people pleaser to the bone. Like I always just wanted people to like me. And I had like developed this character when I drank, like this very like loud, outspoken, like kind of quote unquote life of the party. That was kind of the role that I had. And then I would like fill that role. And I was always trying to make people laugh, like going out of my way to like make people laugh. And it was just draining. Honestly, it felt like I had a mask on three quarters of the time I was out. It just felt like I was just doing too much. You know, I wasn't being true to myself. And when I, you know, when I realized that things needed to change, because look, I never wanted to be sober. Like, I thought sober was for losers. I was like, I have a great job. I look good. You know, I don't need to be sober. I never wanted to be sober, but I was ready in the sense that something needed to change because, you know, I was in therapy. I was trying to moderate my drinking for years. Like, I'm half Italian, half French Canadian. So like our cultures, like I grew up with like alcohol, like drinking at like 11 or 12. My Italian grandfather was homemade wine. You know, my mom, you know, very social family. So I was like brought up with it, but I just quickly realized that it was just complicating my life unnecessarily. And that, I knew that I needed to work on things. So that's what I was trying to moderate my drinking for years, like in therapy, like, okay, let's stop at 2, let's stop at 3, you know.
Oh, that's miserable, isn't it, trying to do that?
It is. It's just so draining. And then finally, I was just like, you know what, I'm going to stop drinking for a bit. And it turned into where I am now. But it's definitely been a process, I'll say.
Was there a catalyst, or was it more of like, well, I may as well try not drinking for a while?
No, actually, there definitely was a catalyst. Well, I mean, it was a built up of a lot of years of just letting myself down, you know, obviously hurting the people closest to me and just doing a lot of things that, you know, I didn't feel good about. But there was a catalyst. There was a particular day I woke up, it was right around the holidays, 2016, just like a really bad night. I felt like shit. I was just embarrassed. And I went on Google that day and I was like, I need to talk to another therapist. Like, I just Googled like therapist in Toronto, and I was able to find somebody in a few hours. It was just around Christmas time. So I was like, crazy that this person was available not too far from my house. So I went in and as a brand new therapist, cause I had been working with somebody for a bit, and I just kind of high level talked about my night last night, high level talked about what I've been working on, all these things. And then he looked at me the way no one had ever spoken to me before. He just said, Luke, you can never be drinking again. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, no, I'm Italian. It's French Canadian. Like, are you crazy? Like, no. That's not possible. And just the way he said it. And I debated him in the moment. And I remember going back to my car after our session, and I couldn't stop crying because I knew that there was something there. And I made the decision that I was just going to be open-minded to what he had to say. So I went back to see him and he says, okay, Luke, I'm going to put you in group therapy, like through CAMH, Center of Addiction and Mental Health in Toronto. And he put me into like a pretty advanced group because I wasn't just drinking alcohol. I got into drugs. Cocaine was my drug of choice. So he put me in a group of people who were struggling with cocaine and other hard drugs, even harder than that. And I did one session of this group and it just opened up my eyes so much. I was like, Luke, don't fool yourself. This could be you. Like, and but by that, I mean, we're going around the room talking about our, you know, what do we do? Like some tips or things that we do. And I mentioned this app that I downloaded on my phone to keep track of my days. At that point, I had like a week or whatever it was. And I felt good tracking my days. Everyone looked at me in that room like, you have a phone. Like that's how bad it was. And it was just, it gave me what I needed to see that like, okay, Luke, you're on this path. You're on a bad trajectory. And then I never went back to the therapist, and I just white knuckled it on my own. And it was an absolute grind. It was very, very difficult, but it was absolutely worth it. Like, what can I say? It's best thing I've done, hands down. No question.
It is very hard, though, when you are in a position that partying becomes part of your personality, because then it feels like you're giving up a core part of who you are as a person. Like, well, if I'm not the person who, you know, likes to do this, or, you know, for me, I got big into wine, like knowing about wine and like being a wine snob, and like that somehow masked the fact that alcoholism was like very, very rampant. But I was like, no, it's my hobby. Like, I know all these things about this thing, but it becomes part of who you are. And so when that is challenged, just like any other part of our identity, it's very uncomfortable. But I think people don't really realize that can happen. And we're talking, this is a running podcast, right? We can talk about many different ways that our identities manifest, including I am somebody who runs, I am a runner, right? But when you kind of knock out the support for one of these pillars of your personality, of your identity, alcohol or drugs, that grieving the loss of who you were, I think, is not something that people really talk about when it comes to getting sober. Did you experience any of that?
Oh my goodness. Absolutely. Big time. Because I held on to my identity of being kind of the life of the, like this just extra person. I held on to that at the beginning. And that was what the hard part is. I tried to almost fill that void, like fill that role without, you know, feeling like that. I was like forcing myself even more. And it was just really, really uncomfortable. And when I said, like, at the beginning, how there was, you know, the first 5 years kind of in the sober closet, and the last 2.5+ years, you know, on this, you know, outspoken, you know, owning my story journey, it's really what the difference is, an identity shift that I had. Because by me coming out and sharing it, I started becoming proud of my identity of, like, being sober, being a sober runner. Like I and being a sober dad and a sober husband, that's how I identify today. And all of those things I'm very proud of, like very proud of. So when you have pride behind your identity, it's a life changer. It's a game changer, game changer. So that was a huge, huge part. And that's why I've been so vocal about my story, is because I don't want people to think that you need to wait X amount of days, months, years to like have that shift. You can do that shift right away. You don't need to wait. It's not a time-based thing. It's not. It's a mindset thing. And I wish I knew that. I learned it the hard way, but that's okay. Everything worked out just fine, just the way it was meant to be. So I have no regrets at all. But that's why it's like I'm so passionate about sharing my story so that maybe a couple people may relate to it, and then can make those necessary changes early and just set themselves up a little bit better than I did.
And helping prevent all the future misery, right? I mean, that's tough too when you see people who are struggling. And, you know, obviously I want to talk about, you know, part of what you do for your work and coaching and all of that. But one thing I do want to ask is, I know, so I'll give you a bit of backstory. I was first introduced to 12-step programs when I was in my late teens, because I went to college and was like, this is literally a free-for-all. Like, I can drink 7 nights a week? Score. What's class? And then I also had a terrible, terrible eating disorder at the same time. So I went to an inpatient program that was primarily for my eating disorder, but they're also like, oh, and you also should probably be with the AA people. Like, you clearly have a problem there as well. Yeah. So I was introduced to the 12-step program and I really didn't like it. It's something that I really struggled with throughout my 20s, about essentially feeling like if I had quote unquote failed AA, then there was no hope for me. But it works for some people, right? It is a fabulous program for some people. And if it works for you, that's awesome. But it's not the only way to get sober. So I'd be curious to know about your experience with 12-step programs, or if you did anything like any, like the SMART program, like what did your recovery look like in the initial phases?
In the initial phases, like I mentioned, it was years of therapy trying to moderate my drinking, because I was just, I couldn't accept the fact that I just wouldn't drink again. Like it was too scary. So I was like, I can't do that. So it took a bit of that group and one-on-one individual. But like I said, after that, I just did it on my own. I never looked into AA. I never did AA. Smart Recovery, never did any of that stuff. I just felt that, this is my own ignorance, I guess. I just felt like I wouldn't relate to it. Honestly, I didn't, because I didn't relate to the term alcoholic. Like I just never related to that term. And I feel like AA is all about being anonymous, and like, you know, you hear the story or the way the meetings go. It's like, my name's Luke and I'm an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic. I never associated with that. I looked at like I was AUD, alcohol use disorder, which is a difference in my opinion, because I could go weeks without drinking. My opinion, alcoholic is more of a daily dependency on it. And by the way, I'm not saying that in disrespect at all. like at all. But for me, it's like, I didn't relate to that. I didn't relate to that at all. So like I said, I just kind of did it on my own. Didn't talk about it. Just really, you know, kept my why close at the end of the day. At the end of the day, my why of why I was doing this thing that was hard meant a lot to me. And it just kept me through the really bad times. But then that's, you know, going back to, you know, what I do now, why it's so passionate to me is because I want to create a space where people, you know, you don't need to identify as an alcoholic. It's not, because the way I look at that, that's almost like reactive, right? It's like a reactive thing. It's like, okay, you know, things are not good. I need to make change. But the way I look at it, this is like a proactive thing. It's getting ahead of it before you lose your relationships, you know, work. Like you shouldn't even come close to that quote unquote rock bottom to know that it's okay to make some changes. Like it's a positive thing. Like the term sober still has such as a negative connotation, like a stigma to it. You think of it, you say you're sober. We talked about it at the beginning. People are like, you know, like, what's wrong with you? Like you're sober. Like that's like you're against alcohol. Right. But it's not like that at all. It's a really amazing, it's a beautiful, empowering thing. And, I want to create a space where people can, you know, be proud of that journey, be proud of it. And, so anyways, it's been a lot of fun to meet a lot of people who can relate to that, you know, and we lift each other up. I feel very supported and I have a great community that I'm a part of and that amazing people that I've met.
I think your point about terminology is really important because, yeah, I think there's a lot of the terminology that is maybe preventing people from letting go of alcohol because, again, oh, it's not that bad. I can go weeks without drinking. Yep. You know, I can easily limit to a couple, you know, glasses. But at the end of the day, like I always, you know, if somebody asks me a question about their drinking, like it's not what I think about what you're doing. It's about how you feel about what you're doing. You know, I've known people who have quit drinking who like had one drink a week, but they're like, hey, like this isn't serving me anymore because when I yep. do drink, these things happen. I don't like when these things happen. And conversely, yeah, and people who have been drinking vodka all day, all week, like that's also somebody who has a problem. But those two things yeah. exist in the same space. You don't have to wait yeah. to get to be the really bad version. If you're wondering to yourself, is this serving me right now? And if the answer is no, then you can stop.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. And only people know for themselves what it is and how it is, right? You know, for the people who are able to have a few drinks and, you know, and things are great, like, you know, all the power to you. Like, that's great. Like I said, my wife drinks and I want her to enjoy because the way I look at it, she doesn't have that like other gear that I have in me. Like I have this other gear in me that when this gear is activated, it's really hard to deactivate it. So it's like, I was like a no off switch drinker. Like I could go a month, 2 months without drinking at all. But as soon as I had a couple, I was like, why would I want to stop? I'm having a great time. I'm laughing. I'm connecting, you know, this is a lot of fun. So that's that, you know, the big part of why I don't drink is just, it's just not worth it. But you know, so many of my friends, 95% of my friends still drink and I'm still able to hang out with them. And just not feel like I'm missing out. If anything, I'm more confident in myself than I've ever been. And the craziest thing was I drank to be more confident. If I could just like simplify, like why did I drink? I wanted to be more confident. I wanted people to like me and I wanted to be more confident. And it's like, I found all of that by not drinking. It's like, that's the crazy part, right?
The paradox.
And then you find these other hobbies, and you do this like self-discovery part, right? You remove the alcohol or the thing that you were doing. You have no choice but to like learn about yourself. Like, what is it do I like to do? You know, who am I? Like real self-discovery. And that's when I found running. I found running on my sober journey 2.5 years in. I hated running growing up, played a lot of sports, but I hated running. But I slowly got into it. And it's like, I like running and my sobriety, they're just like two of the best things in my life. They make me just a better dad, a better husband, a better person, bottom line.
I remember reading this somewhere, and it's kind of stuck with me, that thinking about, you know, the real emotional turmoil and pain that we put ourselves through when we're stuck in these cycles of substance abuse, and the self-loathing and like all the self-inflicted, like knowing that you did this to yourself and being like, I'm a terrible person. I remember reading something about the fact that one of the reasons that people who are, you know, I want to say, you know, sober, right, formerly addicted to abusing substances, one of the reasons we make such great endurance athletes is because we're really good at handling large amounts of pain. Like we're really good at suffering.
Absolutely. And we're also very, very passionate, I find. Like when we have something on our mind that we're going to do it, we're going to do it, right? It's like if we're going to drink, we're going to use drugs. Like if it's on our mind, we're going to go out of our way to make sure that that happens. It's like you funnel a bit of that energy and that like go forward attitude into something productive. It's like imagine what you could do. Absolutely.
Have you noticed any specific parallels to, I'm going to say, the kind of the unfolding of your journey as a runner and how that's paralleled your journey through sobriety? Because I always say that, you know, running lessons are life lessons and life lessons are running lessons. Like they are inextricably interlinked. Has there been anything where you're like, no, this was a major aha moment for me, like when I was doing this workout or in this race and something clicked?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that the biggest parallel I find between the two is that they are both hard. It's like most people don't understand running. They don't. I mean, it's a beautiful sport. It's a community thing, but the common person does not run. Like, I mean, a lot of people run, but there's also a lot of people who don't run. And the people who don't run, you know, they don't necessarily understand what running is all about. They think we're crazy. Like you run for fun. Like people, you know, who's chasing you, right? Like why are you running? But here's the thing. It's hard. Running, let's be honest. Running is hard. Like we love it, but we also hate it. Well, me personally, I love it and I hate it at the same time, but it's hard. It like pushes me in ways that like, it's a very much a mindset thing for like for all of us. But for me, it's like, it's hard. And I like to do hard things. Same with my sober journey is it's hard. Like not drink, like going against the grain when society wants you to drink and say, no, that's not for me. And like doing it and not drink. It's hard. Like it's meant, the way I look at it, it's meant to be hard. But that's where the growth is when you're doing hard things. If you're doing comfortable things all day long, like comfortable is like sitting on the couch. That's comfortable, right? You sit on the couch all day. I'm like, there's a time and place for it, absolutely. But like, if that's what you're doing, you're not pushing yourself. Where's the growth? It's like this sober journey, my running journey, is just taught me to like push myself and believe in myself. That's what it comes down to, is just believing in yourself. And I find that I push myself in other ways. Like, look, if it wasn't for this sober journey, okay, or self-discovery or whatever label you want to give it, I definitely wouldn't be talking to you today. And like by me pushing myself doing scary things, it's made me explore parts of myself that I never knew I would enjoy. Do you know what I mean? I learned a lot about myself. And running, same thing. I've met so many amazing friends who run. I just love the community aspect. You know, it's an amazing thing. And I think about my daughter, right, who's going to be 5 soon. You know, she's come to me to every single one of my races. She does the kids races. When there's like races, there's like the little kids 500 meter or 1 kilometer race. She's done 4 or 5 of those. Like, it's just a great thing. It's a beautiful thing. And I hope to be able to do both for a long time.
So my running and sobriety journey are essentially interlinked. I quit drinking and then started running. Like I quit drinking on whatever it was on a Monday. And then 2 days later, I was out trying to run. Couldn't run a mile. But I do distinctly remember for the first 6 months or so of being sober, I couldn't run without music. Like I couldn't be alone in my head. It was terrifying to think that I would have to go out and like run with no distraction or like no kind of stimulation. And I very distinctly was like, I don't want to see what's going on. And like, I don't want to peel back the curtain. I don't want to know. Like, I just want to listen to my stupid techno music and like run my thing. And then I remember I had a tempo workout I was supposed to be doing. My headphones weren't charged. And I had the choice of, well, you can go do it or without music, or you can not. You can just sit at home and like not and skip your workout. And I went and did it. And I showed myself that, hey, what's between my ears isn't so scary anymore. And that for me, I feel, was a really huge turning point in becoming more comfortable just with myself. Because it is really, I think what it is, it's about finding who you are and like trying to become the better version of that, if that's possible. I would just be curious to know, because I know you work with people in recovery, sober runners, sober curious runners, and athletes. I'd be curious to know if anybody has ever expressed anything similar to you, because that was, that's such a core memory of my early sobriety that like I literally couldn't run without music. Yeah. And have you ever heard that before?
I have not, actually. I have not, but I can absolutely see what you mean. I can absolutely see what you mean. Yeah, that's great. I love that we're talking about this. I mean, obviously I talk a lot about this. Like I've dedicated, you know, a lot of things to my journey and just trying to help others, coaching, life coaching, all that stuff. But I'm really proud of you, Elizabeth, to be sharing and talking about this, because you mentioned at the beginning, you haven't talked about this a ton, right, on your show. Because I guarantee there's a lot of people who look up to you. You can already tell you have a great, you're just very, authentic, and a lot of people, I'm sure, look up to you. That they will, like, not that we're trying to convince people to be sober. That's not what we're trying to do at all. But it just shows that there is a path for this to either, maybe for someone to drink less. Hey, you know, that could be a very positive thing too. So it's drinking less, getting into running, like that's a great thing. Why not explore that a little bit? So I give you so much respect to be talking about this. So I'm glad that, you know, you chose me to like have that conversation with.
Well,
so
thank you.
I appreciate it.
I appreciate that. That's very kind of you. I know it's tough. It's tough. And yeah. I'm sure you probably go through this a lot, is that, you know, being vulnerable in front of strangers. Yeah. It's tough. I mean, it gets easier the more that you do it, but it's one of those things where, you know, what actually happens is less scary than what you think is going to happen. And I'm going to liken that. I'm going to draw the parallel all the way to running and like the fear of unknown when you step up to the start line, you're entering into a monster workout. Like it's the same fear. It's just a different like version of it. Like the fear and anxiety I had before I quit drinking about who would I be if I don't drink, right? And it sounds like you had a very similar, like, who would I be if I don't do this anymore? There's the fear of the unknown. Right. There's the I can't run without music. It's the fear of the unknown about what's inside my head. But kind of the flip side, the positive side that we get to harness now is the stepping up to the start line of a race or having that big workout and saying the fear of the unknown, but you're excited about it. Have you? Yeah. That's something that I really love that I get to enjoy nowadays, is like, oh, this is terrifying, but like, we're going to go see what happens.
That's right. What's the worst thing that's going to happen? I play that scenario in my head a lot. Like, what's the absolute worst thing that can happen? And you quickly realize it's actually not that bad. It's really not that bad, right? But that's fun. Like, absolutely pushing yourself, doing scary things. That's where I find it's also the most rewarding. When you do things that don't, like, easy things, there's no reward. But when you do things that require a lot of work, a lot of, iterations or discipline, and you're able to accomplish it or get closer, get better, and you see that improvement, it's just a really good feeling. It just, you really want to celebrate that, right? Whatever that is for you. But for me, it's running. Absolutely. Just it helps me, you know, with my, you know, if I like chasing goals. I like, I'm a very goal oriented type person. And it's not always to try to have a faster time. Like, it's really not. Like, yeah, like it's fun qualifying for races and, you know, trying to beat your last race, but I'm starting to appreciate that it's not all about the time on your watch. Like, obviously that if you're the type of person who likes to push yourself, it is. But for me, where I'm getting more joy recently with my running, and mind you, I have a marathon on May 5th in less than 2 weeks. I'm in the Toronto Marathon. So I'm very goal-oriented. I'm going, but where I'm getting most joy out of my running is that I'm starting, because I formed this run club called the Sober Striders. and it's for sober, sober curious, and sober supporters. It's like a run club. We meet once a week. It's a virtual run club. I'm getting so much joy out of getting people into running who've never ran before. That brings me a lot of joy. So that's all around running. You know what I mean? The running community, the running aspect of meeting other people who are pushing each other. I absolutely love that. I would say more so than the feeling I get when I cross the line by myself with a goal that I have in mind. That's what I'm starting to learn about myself in the last 6 months or so that I've started this club. It's been very rewarding.
It really is about being part of something greater. I mean, like you said, the personal achievements, like those are nice, but they feel hollow sometimes when that's the only thing that you're focused on. And I've had a similar experience as well, where it's like, yeah, I mean, I could chase more times, or like, I could feel like I'm helping people in a way that's more meaningful than just saying like, look how fast I ran. You know, anybody can do that. Anybody who's fast, faster than me, for sure. Like, those people exist, go get inspired by them. But I mean, I love that sense of finding something deeper in the running community, because it gives to us, and then we give back to it. And it's this beautiful kind of give and take relationship. Have you seen more interest in being sober recently? I feel like sobriety is kind of trendy these days, which I love it, because there's so many more mocktail options in restaurants.
So many more options. So there's a shift happening, and it's not a trend. It's definitely not a trend. There's an actual movement happening. I'm feeling that people are just, they want to just, who doesn't want to feel good most of the time, right? Like, who doesn't want to be their best most of the, I say most because look, let's be realistic, right? Things happen and nothing's perfect, but most of the time I want to show up for myself as good as I can most of the time. And I know for me, that's without alcohol, and maybe for some it's less, but there is a movement happening where I'm finding that it's becoming more and more, socially acceptable to say things like, I don't drink, and just stop the sentence there. It's like, no, I don't drink. It's more and more acceptable. And that's really, really cool. Like, that's a really great thing. You know, you're saying mocktails. There's in Toronto, there's been a few alcohol-free bottle shops, standalone stores that are dedicated to all alcohol-free. I just did a video with one of them just the other day. And do you know how many people, like a lot of people were messaging me and like, tell me more about this place. Where is it? Like, there's interest. And the people that are messaging me are also friends of mine who I know still drink. Right? Because a lot of people are asking, look, where do you buy your alcohol-free drinks? I'm curious. Or I'm having a party, or having this thing, and I want to provide options for people. And it's not just like pop and water and sparkling water for people who aren't drinking. Like, it's fun to mix in different things, right? Different options. And I love that it's happening. And it just feels great. Like, for me, drinking NAs, like non-alcoholics, is not for everybody. I know a lot of people who would not like that. It may be triggering, and I totally respect that. Absolutely. For me, it's not triggering. If anything, it makes me feel more like I'm still partaking in the social aspect without any of the downside that I get from alcohol. So for me, it's like when I'm going somewhere socially, backyard barbecue to a wedding or everything in between, I always want to make sure that I have alcohol-free NA beers. I'm a big NA beer guy. I was a big beer drinker. And for me, it's like, I like to have something in my hand that's not water, that tastes, I like the taste of the beer. And I feel like I'm so much more like happy when I have this in my hand socially. I don't need it that night, like when I'm watching TV or having pizza, I don't need it. But when I'm out socially, I definitely feel more comfortable with them in my hand.
It's so fascinating that the kind of, the physical signifiers of like being in a social environment, because I felt that too. And it's interesting when you're saying you were in the sober closet for 5 years, and you know, when I first quit drinking, like the people who knew me really well were like, oh, thank God, this is a good decision. But people who kind of knew me, you know, peripherally, kind of acquaintance wise, you know, didn't really know how bad it was. And honestly, people close to me didn't really know how bad it was. But it was just so much easier to kind of rock up with a glass of sparkling water with a lime in it. And people just thought it was a cocktail. Like,
yeah.
So it absolutely serves a place. But also, like, you feel like you're part of something. There's something that's very human and communal about sharing food and drink together. It's just that in a lot of places where alcohol is a very culturally accepted beverage, that drink tends to be alcohol. So, you know, and that's the thing I hear with people who really struggle a lot is like, oh, you know, I was invited to this party and like they're big drinkers, or like, oh, when I go out with my friends, like we're usually out pretty late because I like to go to these bars. How can I participate? Can I participate in these events if I don't drink alcohol? Right. Or like I don't know what it'd be like to participate in these events without alcohol, or like only drink water. And like you said, for some people, non-alcoholic beer or similar, like, you know, things that taste like liquor, but they're not liquor, like the, you know, ish substitutes, they're not for everybody, but they're helpful. Right. And I think the idea that there's one way to be sober, that's got to go away, right? We know that there are many, many ways to not drink. And this idea that you have to do this one very specific, this is the sober pathway, right? Just like training for races. Like there's many different ways to be a runner. You can many different ways to be sober.
Totally. Well said. I couldn't agree more. And that's, I think, part of the reason which shied me away from AA. Because I've had some people that are part of it. Look, I really have nothing against it. If it works for you, that's amazing. At the end, like you said, there's no one path. What works for me that may not work for you, and vice versa. But I know the NA theory or the practice of NA does not welcome or does not support the NAs, because it's like you're still a part of it. You're still doing the thing. It's like a representation or whatever. It's frowned upon.
Yeah.
It's frowned upon. And it's very much like black or white, kind of like, this is how you should do it. And I don't, like you said beautifully, I agree. It's not one way. What works for you, you know, amazing. Like I know a lot of people who are also, what do they call it? California sober. Mm-hmm. They don't drink alcohol, but you know, they maybe smoke weed, and all the power to you. That's amazing. Like, it's not black or white. It's not like, okay, hey, You can't do nothing. You can't do anything. It's what works for you. If you're still able to have fun and all that, and still, you know, be in control, whatever you're looking to be, you can do that. Good for you. Also with alcohol, if you're able to be what you want to be and you're having a good time, and it's not affecting you, all the power to you. There's nothing wrong with that. But also, if I choose to have none of that, right, it should be also all the power to me. Awesome, Luke. Awesome, Elizabeth. Good for you. Like, who cares? Who cares? Right.
I think it's the presupposition that if somebody's doing it differently from me, they're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. There'll be people for whom kind of any substances are probably not a great idea. Like, that's for them to figure out, not for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Couldn't agree more. And this whole celebrity thing, you're seeing more and more celebrities talking or sharing that side of them. And I really think that's really cool. Because look, we love talking about, I mean, everyone's different, like we're sort of referencing, but you know, when you see somebody who you look up to and that they don't do it, it just, I don't know, it makes you maybe feel a little better. Like for me, a big quote unquote, call it celebrity that I really admire, that I look up to, is Rich Roll. And he's an absolute badass, incredible athlete. He's doing an amazing thing with his podcast. Just an amazing thought leader. He really is. And it's like, I look up to him so much. And I discovered him on my journey, right? Being a sober athlete, being a sober dad. Like a friend introduced me to his book, and it's just like, I've been like just like really, really key, like relating to him and looking up to him so much. When you find those role models, those people that you maybe see a little bit of yourself in them, or you're just really kind of attracted to what they're doing, hang on to that. It's really great to have role models who you look up to. And yeah, maybe it's a celebrity, maybe it's a, you know, someone else, but it's just, it's important to have that kind of inspiration close by to you to know what it looks like, that it's not doom and gloom. It's not like, oh my God, I can't have fun anymore. What am I going to do for fun? And like losing yourself. No, it's a very empowering thing. And a good way to get through that is by, one, making sober friends or people who are on the similar wavelength as you with similar goals. It's really important to be a part of that, because the biggest thing that I find in working with clients and helping them on this journey is that it can be very isolating, and people, it's easy to feel very alone, right? Like, let's say you're trying to drink less, right? Maybe you don't have a lot of friends who are trying to drink less with you. So it's like, you're trying to drink less, but your friends are trying to drink the same or more. It's hard, right? It's tough. So when you meet people that are also on a similar wavelength or goal that you are, it makes you feel less alone, and you just feel a part of something. And it's really special. I see personally with people I'm working with when they meet other people who, you know, even if it's virtual, but you have a community that you're part of, and you hear from other people and you get inspired from other people, what they're doing, events that they've had, it helps so much. And it's like, I wish that I had leaned into that at the beginning or my first, you know, X years. I wish I did, because it can be a huge game changer.
That is such a good point that you bring up about the people that we surround ourselves with. And I think, by and large, the running community is probably not the most hard partying community in the world. Like, yeah, there are pockets, right, who like rage, but most people, and they're like, you know, adult runners in their, you know, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. They're probably not also out drinking most nights. So probably a good place to start, the running community. But that's another point too that you bring up. It's like, you know, making these changes sometimes requires making changes about other aspects of your life, like friends who may not serve your best interests anymore. And that's a tough place to be, because when you are, especially for people that you're close to, and I'd love to hear your experience with this and maybe how you counsel people these days, you know, getting pushback from somebody in your circle when you are drinking less or not drinking at all, and getting that like, well, why not? Like, what's wrong with you? But like, you and I drink the same amount and I'm fine. It's like, well, but that's a very, a loss of friendship like that is really hard. And I think a lot of people are reticent to make those changes because those friendships mean a lot to them.
Yep. I hear about that a lot, and it's very, very, it's very real. It's absolutely real, and it's scary. And that could be a huge deterrent for somebody to even consider making changes. It's like, what am I going to do with my friends? But where I kind of go to is this journey. I love to just simplify this path that I'm on. For the first time in my life, it was about prioritizing me over others. Like, if I could just simplify it, it's putting me first. And I never did that. I mentioned I was a people pleaser. I would always put others first. But this path is about, likely for the first time in your life, putting yourself first. And what does that mean? That means I really want to focus on not drinking or drinking less. It's important to me. So you need to develop a bit more of a base around that. And the way to do that is, at first, really like focusing so much on that, building yourself up to the point where you need to be okay saying no. Like, no is a powerful word that I very rarely use, because no is disappointing someone else. But when you learn to say no, you're learning how to build boundaries, and you're learning how to do what you want to do. And in time, with confidence and just more momentum, you're absolutely able to go into those environments be yourself and connect and all these things. But also, you know, I'm good at leaving earlier. Like, I don't like, if I go somewhere, I always have a plan. So that's probably the number one thing when I'm coaching somebody or I'm supporting somebody and they have this thing coming up, you know, a vacation, an event, a corporate event, whatever it is, have a plan. Like, have a plan on what you're going to do. What are you going to say? What are you going to say when it comes up? Because likely someone's going to question you. Why aren't you drinking? That's the first thing. What do you say? And it doesn't need to be as, hey, I'm sober, or hey, I'm trying to drink less. It could be anything. Hey, I'm on a detox right now. I'm not drinking. Or you can make up an excuse. Who cares? Say something, but have a plan of what you're going to say. So when it comes up, you're not like flip-flopping. You're like, I really shouldn't drink tonight. I got this thing in the morning. Like, people sense weakness, they're going to pounce on the weakness and they're going to make it harder for you. They're going to question you. When you're strong and you're assertive and you're not over-explaining and you're just like, no, I'm not drinking tonight. Okay, cool. You know, they kind of back off. So, the friendship thing is real. And to your point, maybe there will be a time where you'll have to revisit certain friendships. And that's hard to do because you've known each other for so long in some cases, right? But, you know, sometimes you just outgrow certain people. That's okay. Like, they're in your life for certain parts of your life. Doesn't mean that you're never going to hang out with them or be friends. It's like, I have some clients that that have a really hard time with that. So what they've been doing is they've been still seeing their friends, but they've been doing things in the morning. They'll go out for brunch, or they'll go for a workout or a yoga class. They'll do something, but not in the evening, because that's when there's more pressure to drink. You go somewhere with somebody in the morning, there's way less pressure to drink. So it can kind of keep the connection because it's important to you, but not to the point where you're just making things harder for yourself.
I also think it's important to note that when that happens, right, if you drink less or stop drinking altogether, there are going to be people who you realized were in your life only because you drank with them. You will never see them in any other context. Yes. And then you'd be like, oh, okay, maybe we were only friends because of the alcohol.
Yep. That's
okay, right? Like you said, people come and go.
Absolutely. And that's okay. Hey, that's right. That's okay.
I love your tip about having a plan about what to say. And I think this depends on the context. I mean, so for me, when I quit drinking, I was in my late 20s. I'd been married for a couple years. I was of that age where like most of my friends were getting pregnant. So I didn't get a ton of questions about why I wasn't drinking from people who didn't know me that well. I think they just kind of like assumed I'm of the age where, you know, women in their early 30s don't drink a lot sometimes. But I also, in some cases, you know, one, it's nobody's business but your own. And like you said, I don't drink, like that's totally acceptable. But you also don't owe anybody your life story. Yeah. Some people might be uncomfortable with telling fibs about that. But like, hey, if it gets you to not drink, tell whatever lie you need to. I'm on antibiotics. I'm doing a whole 30. I need to drive, like whatever it is.
That's right. I'm so glad you brought that up. It's so true. Because I found that sometimes for me, I would go into this overshare mode, where we just overshare, and it was to make someone else feel more comfortable. It was kind of like I felt that there was awkwardness between us, or they were just, you know. So I felt like I needed to justify, and I would overshare, overexplain, and that never felt good after. I never felt like why did I do that? They didn't deserve, like, I barely know this person. They're a work colleague. Like, why did they need to know that about me? Right. So you don't need to do any of that. I mean, the other thing I'll say is there is something really powerful about being vulnerable and letting people in. And I don't mean on social media. I mean with like a couple of your close friends, family, or whoever you really trust and that love you and that have your back. It's a very powerful thing when you can be very transparent and vulnerable with them on what you're doing. And if they do love you, they're going to support you, and to let them in on what you're doing, I find that it helps a lot, because it's like you're building like your true support, like people, because you can't do this alone. Like, as much as I said I did it on my own, I had my wife. Okay, my wife is my rock, and I had a couple key friends that knew Luke does not drink and he's planning on not drinking today or this week, whatever, and they had my back. So let people in. Don't try to think I need to do it all on my own. Let your key friends in, because they can support you. They really, really can support you, and they'll make a big difference. And they'll check in on you. right? They'll be like, hey, how you doing? Or like if I'm at an event and at the, you know, they make sure they grab me the my NA beers, or they're just, you know, be there to support me. And it made it the biggest difference.
Do you feel like you may have become a runner even if you hadn't quit drinking? Do you ever think about that? Because I know, for me, my answer is no. I never would have become a runner if I hadn't gotten sober.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that. I don't think so. I'm going to say the same answer as you. I don't think so. Because I was in the gym a lot. Like, if you were to see a picture of me with my shirt off back when I was drinking a lot, I looked better with my shirt off.
Well, nobody gets into marathoning like, for the abs.
Lean. Yeah, that's yeah, exactly. That's right. So I don't know. I probably would have stayed in the gym. I don't know. I don't think I would have gotten into running if it wasn't for my
let's talk about your Boston qualifying journey then. When did you first get the bug that was something that you wanted to do?
Pretty much right after.
Oh, so like right away, you're like, oh, sweet. 10K. I feel like I could qualify for Boston.
Right away. I was like, what's the big thing in the running community? And I quickly learned that Boston was a big one because you have to qualify and all those things. And I had a couple really close friends who were also into running, into Ironman, that just intrigued me. But it was quickly, I just realized that it just helped me a lot with my mindset, like when I was running. So I signed up for a half marathon shortly after my 10K. And then when I finished that, I did that in October 2019. So just before COVID, I ran my first half marathon. And just around the holidays and into January, I decided that I was going to do a marathon. And I got a coach. I got a running coach. And then COVID happened in, what was it, like February, March, 2020. And while I thought most people were running less, right, because there's no races, I did the opposite. I like triple down. I started running, you know, 6-7 days a week with a coach. And I just went all in, and I loved it. And then I ran my first marathon in 2021. And it was, I don't know how, but I was able to get a qualifying time. I was lucky there was no cutoff that year. There was no cutoff, thank goodness. So I was able to get in. In 2022, I ran Boston. That was my second marathon. My first marathon was in a super small town outside of Toronto called Georgina. It was its inaugural marathon. There maybe have been 200 runners. Like no one on the course.
So you were like solo long running your qualifying marathon.
Pretty much. Exactly. Solo. Yes. Mind you, I had a good friend who was pacing me, but then he dropped me at the last 3 or 4 kilometers. But anyways, it was a really great experience. And I was like, it just made me want to continue doing running things and pushing myself.
Is there anything that you've noticed about, I would say, sticking points to performance that you have been able to draw back to, like things that you were holding on to when you were drinking? Like for me, I'll give you an example. So like for me, one of the things that I really struggle with in I get like anxiety about certain workouts because I'm so afraid of failure that I'd just rather not do the thing at all. And that absolutely stems from disappointing people when I was drinking. And like, if there was a chance I was going to totally F it up, like I would just like not even do it. And so that has just been something that I've been constantly working on, because even though drinking less or not drinking at all probably fix a lot of problems, it doesn't fix all of them.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if I've made that correlation in my mind there, just hearing you say that. I don't think there's anything particular that stood out. But you know, the tough workouts are scary. I find myself still getting sweaty palms or tossing and turning a little bit more the night before a hard workout, either a long run with some hard paces in there or the 400 meter repeat workouts. But someone once said to me, it's just show up, right? Just show up. Like, it's better to be like consistency over intensity. Just showing up is half the battle. The hardest part of the workout is often just putting your shoes on and getting out the front door. Once you have your shoes on and you're out the front door, it's like, okay, you know, do a mile, do a kilometer, do two. Okay. It's like, it comes to you. Whereas like the thought of doing it is just, can be too much sometimes, just scary. So it's easier not to do it. And I think about that with my recovery, my journey. I think about that with, you know, my coaching is just show up. Like there's a lot of times too, where I have these calls, these group calls, right? Just being open, where it's like, okay, Luke, you know, there's whatever, 15, 20 people on a Sunday group call. And it's like, I'm not in the mood. I'm tired. I've had a long day and I'm just not in the mood to do this. And I say to myself, Luke, just show up. And by that, I mean like, you know, like show up and smile and have your little light on, you know, and smile on the call. And then I find that within like a few minutes, it comes to me. It's like, okay, it actually wasn't that bad. It was just a buildup of like getting through the first few minutes. So just showing up is such a big, big thing. It's a big thing that I think about with, especially running, because we know when you're in a serious training block, you're in a, whatever you're doing, there's a lot of days you're not going to want to do it. And it's like, you got it. That's what separates it, I guess, the people who show up, who don't, you know. So what do you do? What do you think about when you have, you know, something on the schedule that you're kind of fearing, or you're just not?
Yeah, I mean, I think the just showing up is huge. It's also easier. So something I also do is give myself permission to bail. Like, you can bail, but you have to try. Like, you can bail after the first rep, but you have to try. Like, you have to do your warm up. You have to go to the track, or you have to get your shoes on. You have to go out the door, and you can stop if it really sucks. But like almost always, okay, this isn't that bad. Or actually, things feel pretty good today. Or you just kind of are so angry at yourself, you just decide to do the whole thing anyways, whatever gets you through it. And I think that's a really just kind of a key life lesson. I don't know, maybe other people learned long before I did, but like, just, it doesn't have to be perfect. If you give yourself the chance, you're more likely like to get it done. But if you never give yourself the chance, it's never going to happen.
Yep. That's right. That's so, and it's so true about this alcohol thing, drinking, not drinking, drinking less, whatever you want to say. It's like, just show up. You know, you may drink, you may be so determined to not drink, right? I want to be sober, or I want to not drink for 30 days, whatever it is. And it's like, let's be realistic. You may drink in that time frame. It's like, show up, I mean like, okay, the next day, so what, now what? It happened, is in the past. Just because you say you drank last night and you didn't want to, doesn't mean you need to drink again today. It's show up today. Okay, it's past me. Let's move forward. What did I learn about that? Was there something that I did not have a plan, or what made it harder? Okay, you're learning about yourself. So it's not a pass or fail thing. It's not a black or white. It truly is a journey. And you may need to pick yourself back up another 1,000 more times until it sticks. And that's okay. Everything is a lesson. It's an opportunity to like learn more about yourself. And another thing, Rich Roll has this little clip that I reshared not too long ago. And he's like, I wish I could pull it up, but it sort of said along the lines of basically for the people who, you know, have hit rock bottom or done things that they don't feel good about, he's like, what an opportunity that is. He uses the word congratulations. He says, congratulations, you have an opportunity to rebuild. Like, it's a beautiful opportunity. So it's like that mindset is like, when shit happens, okay, like learn from it. It's okay. It's not a perfect thing, right? You say to someone, I'm on this sober journey or this recovery journey or whatever, drinking less journey. It's like, it's not about being perfect. Eh? It's not like being perfect. Hey, look at me. I don't, you know, I'm perfect. No, it's just, you want to just get better. So one of the biggest deterrents I'm seeing too is people who try not drinking and they just say, I can't do it. I just can't do it. I keep slipping or keep drinking. And then, you know, the thing that we all love talking about, the amount of time you've been sober, right? How many days, how many years, like, oh, I've been sober X, who gives a shit? You know, the number is not a reflection of your growth that you've pushed through. It's not, it's like the number. It's like your time on your watch is not who you are as a person. Who gives a shit, right? You got into running, you overcame adversity, you became a better version of yourself. You should friggin' celebrate that. Same thing with your journey. It's like, yeah, you know, I've had a tough go. I've been drinking on and off, but guess what? You're a lot better than you were. And you're pushing yourself. You made some new friends and all these great things. Focus on the positive that's happening. Don't let that deter you from showing up.
I mean, this is life. This is running. This is sobriety, right? Because it's the same thing as, okay, so you bombed your workout. Are you just going to quit? Are you going to give up, right? Okay, yep. So your race was a disaster. Right. Are you done? You're just going to stop, right?
That's right.
I actually had it. So when I quit drinking, I don't think I've ever talked about this before. I actually quit in July and then I drank for like 36 hours in September. So the whole thing was that I was like, I woke up one morning. I was like, I'm done. I am done. I don't know what it is, but the switch, it is flipped. I am done. I'm over it. I do not want to drink. But I had a friend coming into town for Labor Day, like a couple months later. And so my plan was, oh, but my friend's in town. Maybe I'll drink when they're here. But up until then, I kind of gave myself, I'm like, well, do it. And then if you want to drink with them, we'll see what happens. And so inside I was running, you know, starting to feel amazing and all this stuff. I was like, wow, this is so totally incredible. And then they showed up into town and I was kind of apprehensive. Like I didn't really want to, but at the same time, like I kind of planned on it. I was like, they're here. And so it wasn't even 2 days. It was 36 hours. It was like one afternoon into the evening, the following morning, maybe not even 24 hours. And I was like, done. And I was like, oh no, this is really not for me anymore. And that just reaffirmed everything. Yeah. But the whole thing is that even though I woke up, right, with this totally like, I'm done. I'm so done. That was still so scary to me that I allowed myself, well, you can bail if you really want to. Now, obviously, right, there's limits to everything. But this idea that we have to be perfect, right? I think it's really limiting. It's limiting in a lot of ways, performance-wise, running-wise, sobriety-wise. Like, just show up. Yep. Just try and see what happens.
That's it.
Love so, that. Luke, tell us. So you are so currently, good. You're running Toronto. Is that the Toronto Waterfront Marathon?
So the it's
okay because there's two Toronto marathons and they're both called the Toronto Marathon.
Exactly. Yeah. That's right. Yes. That's right. It's interesting, right? So they both start, well, one starts more uptown and makes your way down to the water, if you're familiar with Toronto. But anyway, they're both great marathons. So yeah, I'm doing the Toronto Marathon next Saturday. I'm super excited to be able to race and push myself. So I'm excited for that pain cave to come and put that hard work to good use. And I was actually in a crazy car accident about 6 weeks ago, maybe 7 weeks ago now. Crazy story. Just the short version is I was parked in front of my house on a side residential street waiting for my wife to come in the car so we could go pick up our daughter from school. And I texted my wife, Lisa, hey, I'm here. You know, let's go pick up Luna. And I'm just, cars turned off. I'm parked on the side street. All of a sudden I hear tires screeching and I'm like, what's going on? I look back. I'm like, holy shit, this guy's going to hit me. Rear ended me. I'm parked. Okay. Smokes me. He was going, I don't know, say in miles. He was probably going at least 40
oh my God.
To 50 miles an hour. I'm parked, dead stopped. He smokes me and I'm just so shooken up and I look and his car, airbags deployed, smoke coming out of his car. His car's like in the middle of the street. He opens the door and takes off on foot. He had just stolen the car and was driving like a madman and hit me. It's crazy. So the fact that I'm able to run, you know, shortly after that, took a lot of time off. Like I didn't run for a while with had a concussion and it could have been way worse. My daughter was at school. My wife was about to cross. If she crossed the street 10 seconds earlier, she would have been right on the tracks where he drove. So it's like that put so much in perspective for me. Like it could have been way.
I'm glad you're okay. Anyways, oh my God.
So that's like, I got the race coming up and it's like, yeah, I'm very much like goal oriented and I have this time that I'm, you know, we all do. But it's like, that's what I'm saying to myself. It's like, look, you know, you're able to run again. Like you're able to run, like be grateful the fact that you, cause it could have been way worse. So it's like, it's a privilege to be able to run and just have fun. So I'm excited to like,
that's nice that you've been able to
next week.
That would shake a lot of people's confidence, but I love that you've been able to hang on to this. I think that people who've gone through substance abuse issues are really good at like holding simultaneous, you know, dichotomous thinking, like both things can be true. Like you clearly have a performance oriented time goal. You're like, yeah, I really hope I do this. But at the same time, I also will be grateful to be there and like enjoy the process. And like, I think sometimes the whole thing about you are not your numbers, you are not your days, you are not your time. Like those, the numbers are a bonus. It's the experience that is the most important. And we forget that so often in so many areas of our life.
So well said. Couldn't agree more.
So you're running Toronto, but tell us more. So if people are interested in learning more about you, maybe they are sober or sober curious and want to get hooked up with the Sober Striders or learn just kind of following you and hanging out with you, how can they do that?
Yeah, so on Instagram, my Instagram handle is Marathon2Sobriety, the number 2. My wife helped me come up with that because it really is, sobriety is a marathon. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. So I do alcohol-free life coaching. So I do one-on-one with clients, helping them, you know, find the better version of themselves in a life, a fulfilled life without alcohol. And I also do group coaching where I'm attracting these very like-minded, positive, sober and sober curious athletes who are trying to be the best version of themselves as well. And it's a great way to kind of bring people together in a community. So I do monthly coaching with one call a week, usually on Monday nights. And then we have a group chat. It's a great way to kind of feel connected. And I started it last October, and it's been 95% the same people with every month we have new people joining. So it's been a very great group. And so love to people. If you're interested in just hearing more, reach out. And also the Sober Striders is the run club we created at Sober Strider Run Club. And it's just a great thing to do. We do a lot of runs. We do weekly runs. We do some events locally in Toronto with one of the largest grocery chains, health food store in Ontario and Canada, that's been very supportive of us. So they host us once a month. We do this thing. They give away a bunch of stuff. Anyways, so it's been a lot of fun meeting a lot of people. So like-minded people. So, you know, people want to reach out. I'm all about connecting with others and just helping.
Well, I know that I've enjoyed following you on Instagram very much, and I'm glad that we got a chance to chat today. And hopefully, I don't know, probably gave a couple people some food for thought. And of course, as always, in a non-judgmental way, right? This is not about do this, do that. This is about, you know, being curious about who you are and what's actually working for you.
Yeah, that's right. In closing, could I read a very, very short thing from Rich Roll? And it's just, I think it'll summarize, but it's not me who wrote this, just be super clear. He titles it, "So You've Shifted Your Addiction from Alcohol to Running." I hear that all the time. Okay. So it's like five, six lines. I'll read it quick. So you've shifted your addiction from alcohol to running. I hear that all the time. But here's the thing. Alcohol was always the easy choice. Running is always the hard choice. Alcohol is a way out. Running is a way in. Alcohol mutes the senses. Running electrifies perception. Alcohol removes you from reality. Running places you squarely in it. Alcohol stole my life. Running gave birth to a new one. Alcohol is a prison. Running is freedom. Because to drink is to run away, but to run is to drink in wonder.
Oh, that's so good.
It gets me fired up every time I read that.
I'm going to have to save that in my own little quote folder. Luke, thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate our conversation.
Thanks so much for having me, Elizabeth, and I'm so proud of you. Keep going. Keep going.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Don't forget, you can always find and follow me on Instagram at Running Explained. And if you're looking for a coach or a training plan, check me out. Visit my website, runningexplained.co. That's runningexplained.co. See you next time.
This content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you have regarding a medical condition.